Hello everybody and welcome to IT1 Module 2. So this lesson I want to discuss the basic safety practices when you're working with computers, and a lot of people tend to fob over or think that safety practices aren't an important component, but really you have to ensure that you are working safely. And if you're working for an agency of some sort, you'll find that they will want you to understand their safety practices and what's involved. And most places have occupational health and safety procedures that you have to ensure that you are following. So when you're working in the computer industry, it's important that you're going to protect yourself from accidents or injury. You also not only want to protect yourself, you want to protect the equipment you're using. When you think that some of the equipment that you may be using is very expensive, you don't want to be damaging it, or you won't have a job for long. So today we'll be talking not only about looking after yourself and equipment, but we'll also be talking about the proper disposal of hazardous products. Okay, we want to be able to protect not only other people from hazardous products, but also the environment. With regard to safety, I guess the first rule is to try to stay alert to any situations that are going to cause you or anyone around you any injury or damage to your equipment. It's important really to be looking at warning signs that might alert you to danger, and you should always watch for those signs and take any appropriate action to avoid injury. As I mentioned before, it's important to know about the working conditions and safety procedures. Another important aspect is to use the correct tool for the job. If you're using the wrong tools, you're going to be putting yourself at risk or others, and you may damage equipment as well. Okay, so major thing I guess to take out of today's lecture will be that you're going to maintain a safe environment, and you're going to look after yourself, others and your equipment. Now, if we go sort of through point by point, it's important to keep your workplace free of clutter, keep it clean, and as I mentioned, to adhere to the occupational health and safety within the organisation that you're working for. Also, when you're handling equipment, computer equipment, you really need to be reducing any risks of personal injury. You don't want to be damaging the property, and you don't want to be losing vital data. When we're talking about recycling or disposing of hazardous materials, it's really a global issue. We all hear about the problem with things that don't break down in the environment over years, so we don't want to be putting things into the environment that are going to damage our environment. We've only got one Earth, haven't we? Okay, so look into the regulations in your local areas to try and find out about the ways to safely dispose of environmental hazards, because they will vary from place to place, and you'll find that if you look up your local area, that's going to be the most relevant to you. Okay, so big point to point safety guidelines. Try to avoid any damage that you may have to yourself. You don't want to get any zaps from your computer, an electrical shock. Another important thing that people don't think of a lot is having fire extinguishers around. How many of you know where the fire extinguishers are in your workplace? If you're working, have you got one at home if you're working on computers? Very important thing to consider. The other thing is not just having a fire extinguisher, but knowing how to use that fire extinguisher. It's one thing to have them sitting on the wall, another thing knowing how to use them. It's too late to learn how to use them when there's a fire. You need to know how to use it beforehand. Okay, the other consideration when you're working with computers is to understand that there is electrical charges involved. You really don't want to be electrocuted or zapped. Okay, power supplies in particular and monitors have both got really high voltage. So if you were working on those, and some of you may or may not have seen, well, I would suggest actually to you that you do not work on monitors and power supplies. They're really what we call field replaceable things. If they go wrong, just replace them, but don't open them up. Really, it takes an expert in an area to be able to open them up and not cause damage to themselves. If you were someone who was sort of well experienced and you were going to work on them, you would not wear an anti-static wrist strap. Now, I don't know whether any of you have seen the anti-static wrist straps, but they are used when you're working inside computers, and they ground you so that you're not going to get any zaps from electrical discharge. Another thing is I would advise you not to do is work on printers, particularly as a blind person. The printers become very hot and they also have high voltage involved. Anyone who was going to work on a computer should need to ensure that they are being very, very careful because they can get burnt and that type of thing, and they retain high voltage. Okay, so as a fire safety guideline, before you begin any repairs, and so that you're not getting any electrical shock, and also so you're not damaging your computer, you should turn off and unplug your computer before you actually move it, or before you start any repairs. So be very mindful of that. Don't do what other people do and move them while they're still plugged in. You want to make sure that you are working in a safe environment. Always be aware that there is a potential for fire and know how to react if there is a fire. If you were to encounter a fire, first thing you should do is don't try and fight it yourself. Try and get in touch with emergency services first. And you would never fight a fire that's out of control. Always know where your escape routes are, and also have a planned escape route before you begin any work. Know how to get out of your building fairly quickly, and as I mentioned, make sure that you've contacted emergency services straight away. Know where your fire extinguishers are and know how to use them. Also, if your organisation that you're working for has safety training, occupational health and safety training, go along to those safety training things because you'll find that they do drills. And as I was mentioning yesterday when we were having a few problems with the sound quality, and that's why we're re-recording this lecture, how many of us go and sit on a plane and don't listen to the safety procedures? It's really important. Doesn't matter how many times you've heard it, it's really important because if suddenly, you're in a plane and there is a problem, you think you know the safety procedures, but if you haven't got them down so that they're second nature, you could be the one who doesn't get out of the plane. So same with fires. Know what your safety procedures are in your organisation. Know how to get out of the building and to stay safe. There's a number of different classifications for fire extinguishers, and there's a number of different types of fires. So if we're looking at the types of fires, you've got electrical fires and you've got others that involve solvents and that sort of thing. It's important to use the right fire extinguisher for the job. For example, if you have an electrical fire, you don't want to be putting on wood on it. So each of the types of fire extinguishers have specific chemicals that help you to fight a fire. So there are a number of classes. Now you will need to look up your own class of fire extinguishers in your own area or your own country because they may vary. But as a rule of thumb, there's four categories. There's Class A, which is for fighting paper, wood, plastic or cardboard fires. Class B, which is for fighting gasoline, kerosene and other organic solvents. Class C, which is for your electrical equipment. And Class D is for combustible metals. Anyone listening to this after the event, obviously, will be after it's a re it is I'll try and say that again, a re-recorded lecture. Can you send me at CAVI instructors the types of fire extinguisher classifications there are in your country? Just send an email along and just be interested, and we'll keep a list of those. No hurry, anytime this week will do. Okay. So it's important to know, as I said, how to use a fire extinguisher. And if we talk about the use of an aid to help you to remember it, we can use the word PASS, PASS. Okay, so P stands for pull the pin. A, aim at the base of the fire, not at the flames. S is for squeeze the lever. And S again is sweep the nozzle from side to side. So the word pass. Okay, so that's pull, aim, squeeze, and sweep. All right, so that's general idea on how to use a fire extinguisher. Hopefully you'll never need to use one, but okay. Another safety procedure that you should follow when working with computers is to make sure before you actually start to work on the computer, remove any of jewelry like your watch or any rings, that type of thing, because those types of things, if you were to get an electrical discharge, you could get electrical burn on those areas that you're wearing that jewelry. Also, you're protecting your jewelry too. A lot of jewelry is very expensive, so if you're working inside a computer, it's a good idea to take your jewelry off. Don't want to leave your diamonds in there, do you? Okay. Make sure that any loose clothing is secured. As I mentioned before, make sure you turn off and unplug any equipment before you're actually working on it. You might want to too, if you've ever gone dabbling inside a computer, is put some type of tape over the sharp edges, because inside there are some sharp edges, and you don't want to be getting cuts. As I mentioned to you before, never open a power supply or a monitor, and don't touch areas in printers that are hot or use high voltage. I would suggest that we should not work on printers either. Know where your fire extinguishers are, and more importantly, or as important, is know how to use it. Don't have food and drinks in your workplace. How many people have had things damaged by dropping a carbonated beverage into their computer, particularly if it's Coca-Cola? If you keep them away from your computers, you're not going to have that problem. Keep your workplace clean and free of clutter. And if you've got to lift anything heavy, I was a nurse before I, in another lifetime almost. And basically, we were taught right from the beginning to make sure that we were actually keeping our backs straight and our knees bent, not bending over when you're lifting. So be very mindful of that as you go along. Okay, so don't want to end up with a bad back. I don't know how many nurses I know ended up with bad backs. So, okay, so with regard to power fluctuation when you're working in the computer, if we talk about a definition of voltage, and I know some of the students answered this yesterday, but voltage is the force that moves the electrons through a circuit, and we refer to that movement of electrons as current. So computer circuits need voltage and current for them to operate the electrical components. So when you have voltage or current that's not steady in the computer, you can have components inside your computer that won't work properly. And if we're talking about unsteady voltages, we're referring to power fluctuations. Now, something that you will get in your exams is questions about what I'm going to talk about now. And these are the types of AC power fluctuations that can cause you to have power failure or data loss from your computer. Okay, so you will, I'm sure, have questions that ask you what these components are. First one would be, what is a blackout? And a blackout is a complete loss of AC power. It can be caused by blowing a fuse or a transformer. It can also be caused, as we all know, from power lines that have been knocked down in storms. Okay, now another definition here is a brownout. Now, a brownout is a reduced voltage level of AC power that lasts for a period of time. And they occur when the power line voltage drops below 80% of the normal voltage level. And if you overload your electrical circuits, you get a loss of power, and that can cause a brownout. Noise is another term you'll need to come to terms with, she says. Noise is interference from things like generators or lightning, and it results in unclean power, and it can actually cause errors in your computer system. A spike is a sudden increase in voltage, and that lasts for a short period of time. That's hence the word spike. And it exceeds 100% of the normal voltage on the line. You often get spikes when you have lightning strikes. You can get it for other reasons too. After you've had a blackout, when the power comes back on, you can suddenly get a spike in the current, and that can cause problems too. Okay. Power surge. Now, power surge is a dramatic increase in voltage above the normal flow of your electrical current, and it lasts for a few nanoseconds. And if you don't know what a nanosecond is a billionth of a second. Okay. As I mentioned to you before, you will get questions on that in your exams, so just be mindful of that and make sure that you know those definitions, and you're not going to get tricked out, because you might get, as for those of you that have done the Cisco examinations, you'll know that you get multiple choice questions in them, and some of the options can be very close to each other, and you've got to have your wits about you, otherwise you'll be getting them wrong. Okay, there's a little heads up. Okay. Some of the power protection devices you can get devices that are going to actually shield your equipment against the power fluctuations, and most of us use things like surge protectors to protect our equipment. And if we talk about a surge protector, it's just something that helps protect against damage from surges and spikes. And it does that by diverting the extra electrical voltage on the line into the ground. Another thing you can use is an uninterruptible power supply, often spoken of as an UPS. And an UPS protects your equipment against potential electrical power problems. And it does that by supplying electrical power to a computer or another device. With an UPS, the battery is constantly recharging while it's in use. And the UPS is then able to supply a consistent quality of power when you have a brownout or a blackout. Many of the UPS devices that you get are able to communicate directly with the operating system on your computer, and that communication allows the UPS to safely shut down your computer, and it also saves any data you've got prior to the UPS losing all electrical power. You can also get a standby power supply, or an SPS, and that helps protect against potential electrical power problems. And it does that by providing a backup battery, and that helps supply power when you've got incoming voltage that drops below the normal level. During normal operation, you'll find that the battery's on a standby. So what would happen there is when the voltage decreases, the battery then provides DC power to a power inverter, and that converts it to an AC power for the computer. It's not quite as reliable as an UPS because of the time it actually takes to switch over to the battery. So if the switching device fails, the battery won't be able to supply power to the computer. Just as a word of caution here, you shouldn't plug an UPS device into a printer, because you can actually burn out the printer because of electrostatic discharge, or ESD, and we'll be talking about ESD in just a moment. So ESD, when you see it, stands for electrostatic discharge. Okay, now I know in class yesterday what we did was we talked about ESD probability, and I asked the students a couple of questions, and I said, could you tell me what the probability of ESD would be if you had a specific condition? So I will put it here, then I'll pause for a second before I tell you what the answer is, and you can think about it and see if you would have got it right. So if you had cool and dry conditions, could you tell me what the ESD probability is? I can hear those little wheels churning in those brains going, Anyway, the correct answer, if you had a cool and dry day or a cool and dry environment, the probability that you would get electrostatic discharge is high. Okay? If you had a warm and humid day, the probability would be, churn those wheels, it would be low. That's right. Okay. So, electrostatic discharge, the computers like environments that are cool and dry. Okay. All right, we talked a little bit earlier about computers and how that some of them components that are in them are could be harmful to the environment. And if we talk about hazardous materials that are harmful to the environment, we talk about those materials as being toxic waste. Now, toxic waste materials contain heavy concentrations of heavy metals such as cadmium. Lead's also another one, and so is mercury. And as I mentioned to you earlier, the type of way you have to dispose of them is going to be dependent on where you live. Okay, each country has its own environmental protection agencies that look after the safe disposal of toxic waste. So it's really important that if you're disposing of heavy metal items, that you are mindful of what the regulations are in your particular country. Okay, and another thing that's very good to do is to have access to a material safety and data sheet. Basically, that is a fact sheet that actually summarizes the information about material identification, and it also tells you what hazardous ingredients can affect, what they can do to your health, whether they're a fire hazard, and what sort of first aid requirements you should have. We didn't touch a lot on first aid, but that's another thing that everyone should have in their workplace or their home environment is a safety first aid kit. Very, very important. Okay, on your material safety and data sheet, that'll also have things like the chemical reactivity, any information on what to do if there's a spill or a leak, and how to dispose of those hazardous chemicals. It'll also tell you how to store those safely, those types of materials. If you've got a something that is classified as hazardous, then you should look at the manufacturer's material safety and data sheet. Now, if you don't have the manufacturer's information handy, then I would suggest you go to the manufacturer website, whatever that is, and have a look at their material data safety sheet for whatever item it is that you are querying. In most countries, you'll find the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or the OSHA, or the EPA, which is the Environmental Protection Environment. But the Occupational Health and Safety Administration, they've got all the material data safety sheets, and they will have that information too. But as I said, the manufacturer website's a good spot too. Okay, all employees should be informed of the where their material data safety sheets are for environment in their own environment, work environment. And that is important. If it's not there, then I'd be asking your employer, saying, look, I'm working with hazardous materials, and I need access to the material data safety and data sheet. So it's valuable to you because it'll help you to know how to dispose of any potentially hazardous materials and in a way that is safe for you and also for the environment. As I mentioned before, check also your local council regulations. Another thick question you might want to post back to me at CAVI Instructors is, are material safety and data sheets mandatory if you're in a workplace or in your country? Now, if you don't know, ask around, and if you can't find that out, perhaps you could have a look on your local website and do a Google search or something like that. So the tips that are in you, things that should be in a material safety and data sheet, and you can actually add to these. You can keep your own list. Keep the list at any points that you thought are relevant as well. But it should contain the name of the hazardous material, the physical properties of the material, any of the hazardous ingredients that are contained in the material, any reactivity data. And think by that what I mean is it likely to explode? Is it likely to create a fire? It'll also contain what to do if there's a spill or a leak, any other special precautions like whether you need to use gloves to handle it, that type of thing, any potential health hazards. Is breathing in something going to damage your health? Is it going to burn you if it's spilled? All those types of things. So we're talking about what is a health hazard there. And any protection, special protection requirements that you need. Again, we're talking there about things like do I have to wear gloves, masks, types of things when I'm working with that hazardous material. Okay, now we all know that computers and other computing devices eventually get discarded. Now, a lot of them get discarded because they're out of date and we all go on and buy a new one or whatever. But they can also be discarded because things are starting to fail more frequently as things get older. And I'll just make sure my colleague sitting next to me doesn't say anything nasty here. As we get older, we get discarded. I've got Sue ne sitting next to me here, and she tells me she wasn't listening anyway. So, but I was getting in before her. I thought she might make a funny comment. So, okay, computers can become obsolete, not suitable for what we're using for them. They get too old. Things start to fail. Newer ones come on, and we decide, oh, well, it's time to upgrade. So if you're going to do that, consider the if you're getting rid of them, safe disposal of each of your separate components. When we talk about batteries, you have to be very careful of when you're disposing. They contain rare earth metals, and they can hurt the environment. So very important that you're very mindful of that. If, for example, you've got a portable computer system, it could have things like lead or cadmium, lithium, alkaline manganese, and also could have mercury. Those heavy metals do not break down in the environment, so they're going to remain in the environment as a hazard for many years to come. Also, bear in mind that many of those metals, heavy metals, are toxic to us as human beings, toxic to animals, that type of thing. Mercury, for example, is very, very toxic. And we were talking yesterday in the lecture about the Mad Hatter. I don't know whether everyone remembers people in the 18th century. They found a lot of them were going mad, and people, I want to say a lot of them that made hats were going mad, and it turned out to be that the mercury that they were using in the making of their hats was actually causing them to be their mental faculties to be affected. So mercury's not a good thing to be playing around with. Okay, as a technician, you're going to be wanting to recycle batteries, and that's probably the best thing you can do for the environment. And wherever you can recycle, it's a really good idea to do so. So all of the batteries, including the lithium ion and the nickel cadmium, those type of thing, and lead acid, they have got, if you need to dispose of them, you're not recycling, you should be, but if you did need to dispose of them some other way, again, you're going to have to look into your local environmental regulations. Okay. Now, with regard to the disposal of monitors or cathode ray tubes, you need to handle monitors with a lot of care. They do store very high voltage within them, and that is also stored even after they're disconnected from the power. Okay, so the charge that can be inside a monitor can last 3, 4 months. So be very, very mindful of that. I would suggest to you don't even bother trying to open up a monitor at all. Too dangerous. Okay, cathode ray tubes also contain glass, they've got metal, plastics, lead, barium, and they've also, as I mentioned, got rare earth metals. in actual fact, a bit of trivia here, but the cathode ray tubes can actually contain about 1.8 kilograms of lead. So again, monitors need to be disposed of very carefully and according to your local environmental regulations. Okay, that brings us to toner kits. The cartridges and developers that are used for printer toner kits and your printer cartridges need to be disposed of properly, or they better still recycled. You'll find that some of your suppliers will actually take the empty cartridges back and then they refill them. And there are actually companies that specialise in that. There are kits that you can get to refill inkjet printer cartridges, but really they're not recommended. You know, you're better off just going and buying a new one, because if you're using the refill types, you might have a leakage of ink in your printer, and you're going to have a lot of damage if that happens to your printer. And you don't want to be doing that. Also, if you're using refilled inkjet cartridges, it can void your warranty on your printer. So something else to bear in mind there. When you're talking about the proper disposal of chemical solvents, and also in that area we talk about aerosol cans, again I would contact your local environmental agency, and they will tell you how and where to dispose of the chemicals and solvents that you use in cleaning your computer. Don't put them down the sink, you're going to cause environmental damage. And don't dispose of them in any drain that connects into a public sewer, for example. Cans and bottles that contain solvents and other cleaning supplies need to be handled with care. Make sure that you are identifying them and also treating them as hazardous waste. Also be very mindful, just don't throw cans into anything that's going to be incinerated, because the cans will explode if they've got heat from the fire. So I touched on briefly using the right tool for the right job. That's really important. Don't know how many people you see using the wrong tool, and that can cause, well, A, damage to the computer, but more importantly, if you're using the wrong tool, it's possible that you could have an accident to yourself. So it's very important that you right tool, right, you know, for the right job. A number of tools that you have when you're talking about computers. A, we've got hardware tools, and we're talking about things like screwdrivers and such, and also software tools. When we talk about software tools, we're talking about the tools that help you to diagnose computer problems, and they also help you to keep your computer functioning properly. As when you are working as a computer technician, this will come up in your exams, but it makes sense to document any problems you're having. Now, my suggestion to you would be to have a notebook computer or something next to you where you can write down the problems and save the file for future reference. Now, what you should do, write down what the problem was, okay? Then write down the steps that you've used to solve the problem. Then write down when the problem happened, all this type of thing, and what the result was. If it solved the problem, that's great. Okay, now the reason you should have a written down sort of documentation of troubleshooting and solutions is the fact that if you, say, 6 months down the track, you have another computer that has the same problem, it's taken you that first time 3 days to isolate the problem and fix it. This time you look up, oh yes, I did this, this, this and this. 10 minutes later you got that computer back and working. So very good idea, keep a record of all your interventions that you make. With regard to tools, all computer technicians should have a good toolkit and have all the tools you need to have complete your hardware repairs, and you'll get to know which ones you need. But basically they're grouped into four categories. You have the electrostatic discharge tools. I'm going to go through these categories one by one in a moment. The second one would be hand tools. Your third one would be your cleaning tools. And the fourth would be your diagnostic tools. So I'll go through those one by one. Bless you. Sue sneezed. There are two electrostatic discharge tools, so we'll talk about them first. The first one is the antistatic wrist strap. Now, I talked about that a little while ago, just briefly, and I'll talk a little bit more about it here. But the second one is the antistatic MAP. I'll try and say that again. MAT, not MAP. This is what happens when you're lecturing for a while. You're sort of talking for about an hour. We have, oh, I don't know how long we've been talking, but we've been talking a while. Too long, Sue says. She's a horrible lady. And we love each other, really. But when you're talking for a while, you do get a little bit tongue-tied sometimes. So bear with me if I make a verbal slip. So yes, the antistatic wrist strap and the antistatic mat. Now, for those of you that haven't seen an antistatic wrist strap, it actually is a strap that goes around your wrist and then it connects to the computer chassis. So it's grounded to the computer chassis. It can be put on any unpainted part of surface of the computer chassis and it will ground you while you're working. The antistatic mat protects your computer equipment in a way that it prevents static electricity build-up so that you're not getting it accumulating on either the hardware or on you as the technician. Okay, now we talk about the hand tools. You can get computer toolkit repair kits, and depending on what sort of price you pay is what you'll end up with in that toolkit. But you're going to need things like screwdrivers, both types, flathead and Phillips head screwdrivers, and a lot of the different size heads in that component, and a number of other things, but you know, like tweezers and that type of thing, but that you can buy those toolkits. Another thing that you should have is plenty of cleaning tools, and you need to be keeping a clean environment when you're working with computers, and that's going to ensure that your computer components aren't damaged during cleaning. Also, another thing, a diagnostic tool that you'll use a lot is a digital multimeter and a loopback adapter, and they are tools that are used to test hardware. With regard to your electrostatic discharge tools, the antistatic wrist strap is used to prevent any electrostatic discharge damage to your computer equipment. And as I mentioned, on the mat stops any of that EST from building up. Okay, another thing that you use is disk management tools. And you need to be able to identify which software is used in different situations. So the disk management tool will actually help you to detect and also to correct any disk errors. And also it prepares a disk for data storage and it removes any unwanted files. Some of these disk management tools are FDisk or disk management. And that's used to create and to delete partitions on a hard drive. Another one is the format, and it's used to prepare your hard drive to store information, so it formats the hard drive. ScanDisk or CheckDisk, we use that to check the integrity of the files and folders on a hard drive, and it does that by scanning the disk surface and it looks for physical errors. Another tool we use is defrag, and you've probably all defragged your computers, or we hope you have. And we use that to optimize space on your hard drive, and that allows faster access, speeds up the computer, and allows you faster access to programs and data on the computer. Another one that's used a fair bit is disk cleanup, and basically that's like it sounds. You use disk cleanup to clear space on your hard drive, and it does that by searching for the files that it feels it can safely delete. Beware, beware. do check what it's asking you, if it's safe to delete. So. Okay, and disk management, which is a system utility that's used to manage your drives and partitions, and it does things like initializing disks, creating partitions, and then formatting those partitions. Another utility is the System File Checker, or SFC, and that's a command line utility. The abbreviation you'll see a lot of the time is CLI. That just stands for Command Line Utility. Or command line interface, I should say, so CLI. And it scans, the system file checker scans the operating system, and it looks for the critical files, and it looks for any that are corrupted, and it will replace any files that are corrupted. With the you would use the Windows XP, if you're using XP, boot disk and look for troubleshooting and repairing of corrupted files. So Windows XP boot disk is going to repair Windows system files. It's going to restore damaged or lost files, and it'll also allow you to reinstall the operating system if you need it. And there's a whole lot of third-party tools that are used as well, and they help us to troubleshoot problems. Some of those software protection tools would be things like virus scanners and spyware scanners. Now, everyone should be using antivirus and anti-spyware programs. And if you're wondering what these things are, and I'm sure most of you know, with regard to viruses, they infect millions of computers every year. So you need a good antivirus program on your computer. Now, I know that you'll get 100 million people telling you, I exaggerate slightly, but the best antivirus program, the best antivirus program is the one that works for you, the one that's accessible with JAWS or Window Eyes or whatever you're using. So, you know, I'm sure that, you know, if you have any queries about that, I'm sure we'd be only too happy to talk to you on Skype, but I'll tell you what we use. But it's certainly, you know, various people like one or the other, so it's very much an individual thing. There are a number of free antivirus programs that you can get and download off the internet, and some of them like AVG are very, very good programs, AVG free, and I'm not promoting AVG. That's just one of the free ones I can think of off the top of my head, okay, and the AVG free is quite a good program. Also spyware, and that's spyware applications that are sort of sneakily put onto your computer when you go surfing the net and looking on different websites, and they can actually see where you go and what you do because they put little cookies onto your computer. Okay, so be aware of spyware as well, and you can get anti-spyware programs as well, and you can get the ones that are combined antivirus and anti-spyware. So basically, a virus or spyware if you have a virus, it attacks your operating system and your data. And if you have a computer that's got a virus, it could have problems with its performance, or it could actually have component failure. But more likely is it's going to interpret your data and tell someone else what you're doing. So, it generally affect your computer's performance. So to protect the data and the integrity of your operating system and also your hardware, you should have that antivirus and anti-spyware material. Also, if you go into the Windows XP Security Center, it will allow you to check the status of your security settings. Now, you get into that by going through Start, and then you go into the control panel, start programs, control panel, or settings, I should say, control panel. Depends on which variation of XP or that you've got. But if you go in there and you can look at your settings, make sure your firewall is turned on as well in the Windows firewall settings, so that they're running and they are protecting your computer. Okay. The antivirus programs, as I mentioned, you need that antivirus program to protect your computer against any viruses, and very, very important, you have a spyware remover, so that's won't allow anyone to spy on what you're doing. Your firewall, basically that is a program and it runs in the background continuously, and it stops any unauthorized communications to and from your computer. Okay, so that's very, very important to have very good security on your computer. Okay, and I did mention about keeping notes, keeping a journal of any repairs that you make. Your history should be very, very thorough, so that you can document things and look them up quickly again. Okay, now I touched on earlier when we were talking about the material data safety sheet was looking up manufacturer websites. When you're working as a technician, you can learn a lot through places like the internet. It's an excellent resource. You've got to be a bit selective about information because you can find that I'll try and say that again. Information is out of date, particularly with regards to technology, but you can find a lot of information out there on the internet, and that's going to be very, very useful to you. You can use things like Google, an internet search engine. There's a number of those as well. And you can look those up to look up information that you are after. Also, again, manufacturer websites and also online computer manuals. Another area that's interesting too is the online forums and chat rooms. They often have, computer programs that are useful to you, computer chat. And they've also got a lot of technical experience there. Another thing that you should take out in the field with you is a working computer. Take a laptop with you so that if you need to look up information, you can do so. Okay? It's no good saying, oh, look, I'll have to look that up when I get home. You need to have that resource with you. So take something that you can actually look up what you're needing to go into. Okay, I'm just taking a breather for a second. Okay, as I mentioned, I guess we touched on things like keeping things clean. That's really important too when you're thinking of electrostatic discharge, because if you've got a lot of electrostatic discharge in the environment, having it things like dust around is not going to help. You're going to get a build-up of static electricity. Okay, now we don't go into too much into the wrist strap that you wear, and if you've got one in your local environment though, it would be a good idea to go and have a look at it because it's very hard to describe it. But as I mentioned before, it actually connects to the unpainted parts of your computer and grounds you. But if you can get to have a look at one, they are good because during this course you will be learning how to dismantle and reassemble computers, and you'll be needing to wear your electrostatic wrist strap when you're doing that so you're grounded. As I also mentioned, don't wear clothing that's got sort of potential to cause more electrostatic discharge. Some of the clothing that you may have would be things like silk or polyester. Wool's another one. So, and you would not wear an antistatic wrist strap if you were repairing a monitor. And I would say to you, don't try and repair the monitors. Just get rid of them and get a new one. Okay, carpeting. Working on carpet's going to build up static discharge, electrostatic discharge as well. Anyway, so then you would use instead an antistatic mat to ground you as well. When you're working at a workbench, you would ground the workbench and the antistatic floor mat, and then you'd stand on the rack and wearing the wrist strap. That way, your body has the same charge as the equipment that you're working on and reduces the probability of electrostatic discharge. We will be doing a step-by-step removal of. Sorry, disassembly and assembly of a computer over the next couple of weeks, and we will record that. Okay, so even though you're not doing it locally, you will not miss out. I'm just reviewing over a couple of the things we've spoken about because we are getting towards the end of the lecture, but just covering some of the important things. In your toolkit, you'll have things. This is your hardware toolkit, as I mentioned, like a flathead screwdriver, a Phillips head screwdriver. If you're wondering what a Phillips head screw is, the screw is the one that's got the little cross in it. And unless you've got the proper screwdriver, you're going to have a little bit of trouble removing any screws or doing them up. You'll also, in that toolkit, should have things like tweezers. And pliers, that sort of thing. So, you know, you find that those needle nose pliers would be the ones with the long, so you can get in and out where you need to. I touched on dust, keeping your area dust free. That's really important for maintenance too. I would suggest to you that you don't have computers. Most of them are going to expel hot air out the back of them, so don't have them sat right up against a wall. You want that airflow. Remember, computers like to be cool. Keep that airflow nice and cool, and allow it to circulate and allow it to escape. With regard to dust, if you've got an excessive build-up of dust inside the computer, it's going to act like an insulator and it's going to trap heat. What's going to happen if you're trapping heat? Your components aren't going to like it and things are going to overheat and they're going to fail. If we talk about cleaning your computer, before, as I mentioned, safety, 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 before you clean any device, turn it off and unplug the device. Okay? Have it unplugged, be sure. If you're talking about cleaning your computer case or the outside of a monitor, you'd use a mild cleaning solution on a damp, lint-free cloth, and try not to drip any water inside the case. If you did drip any in the case, you just allow enough time for the liquid to dry before you power on the computer. So, you know, don't go and turning on in a hurry, but try to avoid dripping it in. With regard to some of the newer monitors like the LCD screens, my suggestion is not to use ammonia-added glass cleaners or any other solution on your LCD unless the cleaner is specifically designed for that purpose, because otherwise you're going to have damage to the coating on the screen. And if you bear in mind that there's actually no glass protecting the screen, you need to be gentle and don't press too firmly on it as well. Cathode ray tube screens. You would dampen a cloth, clean with a lint-free cloth, use distilled water and wipe the screen from top to bottom. You'd then use a soft dry cloth to then wipe the screen clean and also stop it from streaking after you've cleaned the monitor. With regard to the inside, keeping dust out, you could use compressed air. It comes in a can and that's going to help stop electrostatic buildup. If you're going to do that, make sure you're in a well-ventilated area, and otherwise you're going to be sneezing all the way up the corridor. And I would suggest to you that if you're doing that, is to wear a dust mask. You don't want to be breathing in dust particles. You would use short bursts from the can, and don't turn it upside down. Also, be careful because you don't want the fan blades to spin from the force of the compressed air, otherwise, you might be damaging things. So, you would hold the fan in place. Your fan motor can actually be damaged from the spinning if it's spinning when the motor isn't turned on. You would clean any of the contacts inside the computer with isopropyl alcohol. And you would not use rubbing alcohol because in rubbing alcohol it's got impurities that can damage the contacts inside your computer. And also make sure that you don't get any lint buildup on the contacts inside your computer. And you'd blow any of the lint out with your compressed air before you had any reinstallation. As regards your keyboard, you would clean your keyboard with compressed air. You can buy little keyboard vacuum cleaners as well, and those vacuum cleaners are not very expensive. Don't use a normal vacuum cleaner because they have can build up static electricity and they can cause a discharge of the components. So use the right tool for the right job. You can clean your mouse. Most of us don't use mice. Mices? Mouses? However you say it. But you can use a soft cloth on the outside. Don't use any glass cleaners or that directly onto your mouse. You would use the same cloth to wipe the rollers with the mouse. Okay, and don't put any liquids inside the mouse. So basically today we looked at the safety of when you're working with computers, looking after your own safety, looking after other people's safety. We also looked at using the correct tool. We talked about the fire extinguishers to use and all that type of thing. So I'm going to go on now and do the quiz, And I know you can't answer these questions, but I will pause over after the end and just allow you time to think and see if you could get the right answer. So our first question in the quiz, we'll do module two, yeah. Oh, whatever you like, yeah. Sorry, we're just talking here. Okay, sir. Okay, and then what a time to think about that. So I guess we'll let those wheels turn for a second. For those of you that got 3,000 volts, that was answer C, that is the correct option. Okay, so the normal minimal level of electrostatic discharge that a person can normally feel is 3,000 volts. Okay, thanks, Sue. Question two. Just allowing thinking time. Okay, now the correct answer is B, and B was contact emergency services for help. We're talking about the first thing to do when there's a fire is out of control. You have to get the emergency services there fast, so do that first. Make that quick phone call and get them there, or hit that button if it's in a building where you can do that. So make sure that you contact them first, all right? You wouldn't use an elevator, although you might think that that's the quickest way to get to the lowest floor fast. Yes, it may be, normally, under normal circumstances, but if there's a fire, the elevator may get stuck and you can find that you are trapped inside that elevator and in the building. So don't use an elevator in a fire, if there's a fire. You wouldn't use the company water to stop the fire from extending to other areas straight away. First off, you need to know what type of fire it is. Okay, if it's an electrical fire, water's going to be the worst thing you can do. You would try to control the fire with proper extinguishers, okay? But first one was contact your emergency services for help. Thank you, Sue. Question three. Now we'll let everybody think about it for a minute or two, and then we'll go through the right answers and why they are. Okay, so the two tools that are recommended for cleaning a PC were B, compressed air. Okay, we talked about that just a moment ago. We were talking about using the compressed air for getting out dust. And F was a soft cloth, okay? So yeah, all of the others were wrong there and pretty self-explanatory, I think. Okay, and the answer was B, which is touching an unpainted part of the computer case. That's how you discharge static buildup. Okay, question five, sir. Okay, so we're talking there a device that's specifically designed to protect your computer and electrical devices from excess electrical voltage. So we're looking at a surge of power, so it's a surge protection, surge protector. Okay, and question six, sir. Now you might have to do this as yes, no, okay, one. We're doing it, changing the way this is written, so that, I would suggest probably, does a computer work well if you've got an environment that's hot? And the answer is yes or no. And the answer would be, can you tell me? Can we hear the tune? No. It would affect it, that's right. We're redrafting these questions, so it's a bit there with us. And the answer is yes. It can be affected if there's too much moisture or humidity in there. And the answer is no, they don't mind the cold. And the answer is yes. Okay, question seven. Yeah, and that's the words there that give that away. And these questions are a lot like what you'll get in your exams. So the word there that gives away is sudden and dramatic. So it's a spike, okay? The spike in power. Okay, now I'm going to leave it there for today. Now, next week, we'll be talking about assembling computers. And we will also be doing that locally with our local students, going through it, and we will record that session. So that session will also be put up on the website after we've done it. Okay, so I'd just like to wish you all a very good week. If you have any questions, you can email them to CAVI instructors and we'll be happy to answer them. Don't forget to do your worksheets and labs associated with Module 2 and send them also to CAVI instructors as well. Okay, bye for now and bye from Sue.